Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Welding instructor Alex DeClaire knows VR training platforms like ForgeFX help students master their skills.
There's a big learning curve with welding. Virtual reality simulates that exact muscle memory that they need.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job!
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee.
Alex, I told him to be careful. Oklahoma, you were supposed to handle those Kansas Jayhawks like a Fabergé egg with care. And you know what happened? This.
3 seconds separating Kansas from a moment of historical significance. Three-step drop. Gabriel steps up, lobs to the end zone. It's tipped in the air and knocked away. KU's got to win it. KU's got to win. Oklahoma goes down. And for the first time in nearly 30 years, Kansas with a regular season top 10 victory. And they beat the Sooners 38-33. You can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win. Bowl eligibility for Kansas.
I'm Richard Johnson. That's Alex Kirshner. That was Brian Haney on the Jayhawks Sports Network from Learfield. Check out the College Football Blitz every Saturday from noon Eastern to midnight Eastern, free on the Varsity app. It's the Red Zone channel for college football, and it's free on the Varsity app, available on Apple and Android devices. Alex, 30 minutes on the clock in 3, 2, 1. Kansas 38, Oklahoma 33. A Jason Bean-led Kansas Jayhawks offense was enough in this game to beat Oklahoma.
Yeah, it didn't look in the end like it was going to be enough, but Kansas really swung this game in the last 3 or so minutes after getting stopped on a fourth down, down one. Really impressive sort of Oklahoma-aided showing from their defense. Oklahoma was going to go for a 4th and 6 to put this game away on Kansas's half of the field. False start, change those plans. And then Oklahoma's defense had an Oklahoma defense moment, which it hasn't really had this year, where it just sort of fell apart on the last drive, particularly on a fourth down play where a cornerback just got spun around. It happens. Defensive back is a hard position to play. Stutzman was not on the field, the Oklahoma future All-American linebacker. All that I'm saying is I'm not entirely abandoning ship here for Oklahoma because, A, they are missing their best player on defense at the end of the game, but B, I think we have to really respect Kansas at this point.
First of all, don't want to hear it that Oklahoma gets to forget that they have a good defense when their head coach is one of the best defensive players of this current era.
I'm not saying gets to. I'm just saying did. I mean, it happened.
Look, Kansas was a single-digit underdog in this game. They would like what they've built under Lance Leipold. Again, backup quarterback. What they've built with Lance Leipold is unbelievably impressive to hold on at home. To win this game, or, you know, come from behind at home to win this game at the end. Yes, they got 7 points from the defense in the very, very beginning, which obviously they needed, but a great effort from Kansas, and it's a tribute to what Lance Leipold and that offensive staff in particular has built there.
They're just impressive. They're so impressive, and we're so used to it now that I don't think anyone was stunned by this. What I was pretty...
Well, we weren't, but I think when you see Kansas sure. beats Oklahoma, you know, the viewing public... Was.
Sure. Very fair. The one thing for Kansas that was pretty surprising to me is that Oklahoma did not knife through butter them. Like, I thought Kansas's defense, and Oklahoma scored into the 30s in this game. It wasn't like a shutdown performance, but Kansas's defense, aided by the clock at the very end, but on a couple of other important drives throughout the game, including the one where it scored a touchdown for Kansas early on, stood up and made plays against a far superior unit Oklahoma offense versus Kansas defense. It was a hell of a show. They're a refreshing team. And the goalpost, Richard, also got some refreshment, I saw. They dunked it in the
they
little
got
lake.
Thrown in a gross pond, I guess, that's on campus.
Yeah.
And a couple, and it's funny, if you go to Memorial Stadium in Lawrence, I mean, you really can just walk them out of the end zone. There's no infrastructure there. You just walk them out.
Rock chalk, baby. Texas 35, BYU 6. I think Texas might need Quinn Ewers back eventually.
No might about it.
All right, there's no might about it. Throw it to A.D. Mitchell a little bit more. That would also probably be good. But they won 35-6, so these were obviously not very acute problems against BYU.
It's going to get real acute next week. Kansas State 41, Houston 0. Kansas State absolutely blanked Houston. We knew this was going to happen in some way, shape, or form. Kansas State is way better than Houston and is going to throw them out the paint, out the bar. These two teams play next week, Texas and Kansas State do.
It's going to be good.
Obviously. Yeah. Yes, it's going to be a good one. And Texas is going to have something on offense to compete with K-State, because I think K-State's going to make that game dirty, mucky, grimy. And can Malik Murphy get you enough on offense?
So Godfrey likes to do, Stephen Godfrey, our co-host when he's here, in the midweek shows, likes to say Bo Davis was right. This will be sort of the exactly how physical are you now thing for Texas when they play Kansas State. We'll talk about it on the midweek show, I have no doubt. But Kansas State is among teams that would just be very unpleasant physically to play against. Like if the word is unpleasant, Kansas State might be the top of the list. Iowa State 30, Baylor 18. Iowa State,
speaking of unpleasant,
Iowa State still needs to be talked about in the hurry up vis-a-vis the Big 12 championship race, because they only have one loss in the league. Rocco Becht, young quarterback, leading a kind of renaissance here. They have 5 wins. It looked like things were, at a couple different points this year, it looked like things were going to get real, real ugly. They were very dicey for Iowa State. But remember, they are better than Baylor, because Baylor is really bad. And a couple good wide receivers working with Rocco Becht. They didn't forget how to play defense, which has been typically their forte under Matt Campbell. Impressive. Still in it. Got to pay attention to
him. West Virginia 41, UCF 28. UCF is having the... all 4 of these teams really are having the kind of nightmare entrance into the Big 12. We'll get to Oklahoma State 45, Cincinnati 13 in a second. But all 4 of these teams are really not having a great time in the new digs.
They're all overmatched, every one of them, which makes sense because Power 5 football requires a deeper roster to compete at this level than
week in, week out.
Then you could get away with in the American. I mean, it just is what it is. And yes, they are learning that lesson. In this case, 3 interceptions from John Rhys Plumlee, and one of them, Richard, was like, excuse me, John Rhys Plumlee, and one of them was like the funniest interception that I've ever seen in my life. Did you get a look at this one?
I did not, but I'm about to now, apparently.
You got to go look at it. Basically, like, the receiver for UCF has his man beat, like, down near the goal line, falls down, and, like, essentially, like, bicycle kicks the ball up to the DB, who goes off on a long return. It was very, very tough for UCF. Oklahoma State 45, Cincinnati 13. You did want to talk about this one. Oklahoma State has, speaking of teams that have kind of gotten their feet under them, well, Oklahoma State is doing it. Again.
Yeah. Ollie Gordon, a running back from Oklahoma State, is the only thing we want to talk about out of this game, because he's like approximately at a Heisman pace for a running back the last like 3 or 4 games. He is, I mean, the day of the bell cow is over in general in the sport of football, but not in Stillwater. I can tell you that right now. This guy is toting the mail. And is absolutely the reason they've been able to kind of resurrect this season after a sputtering start.
Dude, Oklahoma State works better when they got a dude like this, whether it's Chuba Hubbard or Justice Hill or a wide receiver who's built like a running back, James Washington. Oklahoma State needs a dude at the skill positions at all times, or we've seen what can happen, and clearly they have a dude. Utah 35, Jesus, Oregon 35, Utah 6, and it really could have been worse. I recorded
it. It was over, what, the end of the first quarter?
I mean,
thereabouts.
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, also, Oregon takes the ball. on the opening kickoff and scores in less than 3 minutes and encountered no resistance at all while doing that. And you kind of got a sense from the beginning, like, I mean, you don't know because it's scripted drives. Like, you don't know about the first drive of the game. But this was a total ass kicking from the jump by Oregon. And it's hard to overstate how impressive it is. Utah hadn't lost in this stadium since 2020, which was a fake season. Before that, they haven't lost in this stadium since 2018. And Oregon doesn't just beat them in the stadium, but comprehensively destroys them in the stadium. What is a part of this game that Oregon didn't excel in here? Nothing. You have to look at Oregon as a very serious, not just playoff contender, but like could win games in the playoff type of team.
Really, really need Oregon to get to the Pac-12 championship game against Washington, because I think they are a better team than Washington. They just lost the game the other day.
Like, I think so. And it matters that they lost the game. You play the game.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
No one is saying, because people get jumpy about this, no one's saying that they didn't get a chance to settle it on the field. But this is the way the sport works now. There could be a rematch. And if there is one, I think I'm going to probably pick Oregon.
Yeah. Yes. For Oregon to go into this spot, this opposing crowd, we didn't do any of the, oh, Bo Nix, you know, that, you know, bad Bo, blah, 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 which we've talked about for months, years.
A long time.
Is not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
They were able to go into this spot and absolutely dominate. We talked about this in the midweek. Like, there's a level of physicality that Oregon wants to imbue into their program and into their identity. And to be able to go into Salt Lake City and take their souls, big deal.
Good term for it. Souls were definitely taken here. UCLA 28, Colorado 16. Richard, I did not wind up making it to this one, but I did have a couple of eyeballs on it. And Colorado is, well, two things. They're spiraling. Their quarterback is trying very, very hard.
I watched this game kind of on accident, the entirety of it pretty much. Look, the first half, UCLA has like four turnovers and a missed field goal on its first five offensive drives in the first half. You basically, it's tantamount to very impressive that UCLA was able to win this game given those things. UCLA's defense is very good. Danton Lynn is a really good defensive coordinator, and he's got that defense absolutely humming. The twins, Latu Latu, really good player. But on offense for Colorado, Colorado up front is, as we've stated for like months on end, is not what you want. And it got them in this game. They had a backup, I believe, left guard in this game. And look, Shedeur Sanders was just getting absolutely dominated in this game from a physical perspective. Every time you looked up, he was either getting hurried, rushed, on the ground, getting sacked. ESPN put up a graphic near the very end. 24 pressures, 17 hits, 13 knockdowns, 7 sacks. I personally gained a lot of respect for Shedeur Sanders in this game for just answering the bell every single time, because he didn't have to. Like, you can turn tail, you can fold up the tents, you can quit in this spot, because he was getting absolutely manhandled. He responded. Colorado had a touchdown at the end there, and Deion said it after the game. I mean, he was very clear. Like, they have to get new linemen. They have to basically wipe the slate clean, wipe the deck of that starting offensive line and probably the defensive line too. But up front on offense, they just don't have it.
And an important distinction that's worth making, but I think you get it across pretty well, is that there have been times this year where Shedeur has sort of run around and gotten himself into some trouble.
That's not what happened. No. That is not what happened here.
Yeah, not what happened in this case. Arizona 27, Oregon State 24. Oregon State's Pac-12 championship dreams, unfortunately, have gone the way of the dodo here. But Arizona, we said this coming in, like, they're good. I feared this outcome for Oregon State. I think now, and like, I don't even entirely understand or know Jaden Delora's health status, but I think Noah Fifita probably will be Arizona's quarterback going forward, because it is hard to argue or trifle with these results. They're good. Like, I think they're above the median in the Pac-12. I think they're just one of the better teams in this conference, and Oregon State got a tough lesson in that here.
Frisky business from the Wildcats. USC 50, Cal 49. And when I tell you, USC needed every single one of those points.
So Alex Grinch's key card should not work today at that facility. And it's especially serious because they won. They're still in the Pac-12 championship race.
Well, for now, they play Washington and Oregon.
But I'm just saying, like, are you going to let him be on the sideline for those? It's bad, dude. It is really bad. And this was a beautifully bizarre Pac-12 football game, the kind of thing that you'll miss.
I know what you're going to get to. Get to that in a second.
Okay.
If USC didn't have Caleb Williams, by the way, they lose this game. I mean,
if they didn't have Marshawn Lloyd, they lose this game. I mean, if they didn't have Eric Gentry, they lose this game. I mean, there's take.
Cal was up. Cal was up two scores, late in this game. Yeah.
Cal assisted the USC comeback effort in myriad ways. I think that this was one where I agree with going for it. Because
for two at the end,
For two at the end, and it didn't work. Yeah. They didn't have the play. It got batted away. But you want to try to end the game when you can, if you're the less talented team, is just generally how I see it. Some very Pac-12-y things that went on here, kind of in the old way. For one, the game was on the Pac-12 networks. I was able to gain legal access to that channel, so I watched it.
It must be nice.
But a lot of people probably did not see this because of where it was, and it was a very good game. And also, I think a situation that can only happen out west is that the officials at the end of the first half wrongfully ruled that time had expired on a USC play when they were in field goal range. And so they go into halftime and USC does not get a chance to score points going into half because Caleb Williams had taken too long. They decide during the halftime break that there had been in fact 1 second that was left on the clock. And so when they come out from halftime, they're going to finish the first half with one last play, which happened to be a 33-yard field goal from, I think, the right hash. And I saw that USC's kicker at halftime got to go out there and just start practicing this specific kick like as many times as he wanted in his halftime warm-up. And then he missed the kick.
Cal called a timeout, too. Cal iced him out of halftime.
It's good.
Out of halftime.
It's good. You had to have the timeout, right?
Because you can't take him with you, baby.
You can't take him with you. The USC defense is... I mean, we've beaten the horse, the Trojan horse, I guess it is. It's bad. It's so bad. I mean, I don't know what to say. It's so bad. But what isn't so bad, Richard, is Home Field Apparel. If you use the promo code SCD20 at the website homefieldapparel.com, you can get 20% off your first order with our dear and longest standing partners at Home Field Apparel. I've got the extremely comfortable Home Field Collection quarter zip on right now. Love to wear this thing around the house. They're good. Talk to some people, Richard. Also, I'm going to be, I've talked about this a few times. I'm going to be in Athens, Georgia on Friday, this upcoming Friday, the 2nd of November, with Dog Central, with Home Field Apparel, putting on a tremendous event. I'm going to be moderating a panel with some cool dogs there. Going to be a lot of fun. And the information, you can find it on Homefield's Twitter, my Twitter, where it's pinned, Alex_Kirshner. Would love to see you. Athens, can't wait. Richard, in the ACC, NC State 24, Clemson 17. Clemson is 4-4.
And by the way, Dave Doran was talking that cash shit at the end of the game. I guess so. College game day, Steve Smith, who was the guest picker, called them. I was not watching it either, but I'm assuming 2 and 2 is 4 here. Steve Smith was the guest picker on college game day. I'm assuming he made a basketball school joke of some sort.
Yes, that is
on
what
college
happened.
Game day.
Yes.
And Dave Doran responded.
Look, and respect to Dave Doran for this.
Yeah.
Coaches.
Absolutely.
Coaches, I'm not interested in you pretending that you don't see or you don't hear or you don't care about this or that. Most of these guys have people who keep them, who either themselves, hello, Hugh Freeze, or in the case of like other people on their staffs, are like eagle-eyed about what people are saying about their program. Because A, they're sensitive, they got big egos, and B, it's a perception business because of recruiting and fundraising. They're all paying attention. At least Dave Doran will not lie and claim that he's not paying attention. Clemson has problems. And by the way, Doran was right. NC State's been solid, but Clemson, problems.
Look, Clemson cannot be 4-4. I'm sorry. And I know Notre Dame went 4-8 a few years ago. Yes, it can happen. Florida went 4-8 a few years. Yes, it can happen. But for God's sakes, Clemson.
Dude.
We're in the territory of they might not make a bowl. I think they probably will figure it out, but woo.
Look,
to be having the conversation is an issue.
It's really bad. And I think one of the most interesting gigs that anybody has in college sports in the next year is the new-ish athletic director at Clemson, Graham Neff, who needs to get through to Dabo Swinney, and Dabo has all the contractual leverage so he doesn't have to listen to him, that it is time to make major changes in how he runs the program, specifically the lowest hanging fruit. You've got to take advantage of the transfer portal. Got to get some converts, Dabo. You have to. Like, you just have to, because you don't have the pieces.
Miami 29, Virginia 26. In overtime. Okay. Mario Cristobal did the thing where they didn't try to score at the end of regulation. Again.
It's fair.
When they had the ball. This time, I actually think he's justified in it. They were a little backed up. Yes, Tyler Van Dyke's your quarterback, but they're a little more backed up than they were last week. And then they...
He'd been iffy, too. He hadn't been the most trusty.
Yeah, and but they, again, win the game in overtime. This time, Cade Klubnik was not the quarterback who decided to take it upon himself to run the ball in the end in overtime. But Virginia scores a field goal in the top of the first overtime. Miami is able to score a touchdown in the bottom of the first overtime to win the game on a walk-off.
I like describing overtime like innings. World Series, a lot of fun. Georgia Tech, 46, North Carolina, 42. So Georgia Tech, for their part, before we get to UNC, has stabilized things very nicely. And I have to cop to this, that I think I sort of wrote them off completely after the fiasco. The in it, and fiasco is the word, against Bowling Green month and change ago. They've sort of figured it out on offense, clearly. I mean, Haynes King had one of the best games, maybe the best game of his college career here. They ran it through him. They threw it past him. Eric Singleton Jr., Malik Rutherford, the receivers had big games. Dante Smith, the tailback, had a big game. Now, the question, obviously, is how much of that is Georgia Tech, and how much of that is that Gene Chizik, rumors of the UNC defense getting it together, were exaggerated. Yeah. They were exaggerated.
Bad. Check your sources on that. Who said, look, we are looking for the people who said that the UNC defense was turning the corner. We can't find them. Maybe we will. I don't know.
In this one, we just speculated. We didn't say it. We never bought in hook, line, and sinker, but it clearly hasn't happened. Louisville 23, Duke 0. Richard, I think Duke's season ended in that like 30-second span at the end of the Notre Dame game, when Audric Estime breaks free for the game-winning touchdown run. Riley Leonard goes back out there with the offense, gets hurt. He's playing, but he's not playing. Like, it's not the same dude. And it's obvious. I mean,
there was one where he went down and you were like, eesh. Yeah. And I think he kind of ran out and wasn't wearing a brace. It's not awesome.
I respect him trying.
He can't move.
But yeah, it's just tough. I mean, a guy who was hurt but appears to now be not hurt on the other side of this game was Jawar Jordan, who got hurt early in that Pitt game. Then they had their bye. He was back. He had a bullying afternoon of toting the mail for Louisville. And health matters in this sport. Florida State 41, Wake 16, very status quo. Jordan Travis had one of his very good Jordan Travis games.
Notre Dame 58, Pitt 7. Okay, Notre Dame really is a team that would have loved a 12-team playoff world, because right now they're revving into gear and they're looking like they are serious. But after the game, Alex, your old pal, Pat Narduzzi, may have sort of stepped in it here.
Oh, 100% stepped in it. 100%. This has become a bit of a fight among the Pitt fan base on the internet.
Yeah, and we're not doing journalism school here. Like, enough, man.
But look, there was continue. What Pat Narduzzi said was, and I should probably just quote it directly because this is the nature of the fight. But what he said, this is going to be a paraphrase and then I'll explain. He said that as a coach, you have good players. We lost good players last year and you think you do a good job of replacing them. But and Pitt had struggled with that. It was not the exact words that he used. But he said we had good players and we haven't replaced them was the unmistakable message of what he says. A reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette tweeted this out, and like 10-ish, maybe more Pitt players like angrily commented
which is why it became a thing.
Now, Narduzzi and Pitt will probably argue that he was taken out of context here, because he also added, like, what in my opinion is just the platitude, like, oh, but it starts with me and I didn't coach well enough. But like, I don't know, bro. I don't think the additional context changed very much at all. Like, just because you say it's my fault that we have bad players doesn't exactly change what anyone's going to hear or should hear from that. And it goes to the point that Narduzzi just needs to do a better job talking as the head coach of a football team.
The like the tweet that went out didn't have the "it starts with me" or whatever. So a bunch of Pitt fans like got mad at the reporter and were like, "It's yellow journalism." Like, no, it wasn't, man. No, it wasn't. All right. The spirit of what Narduzzi said still exists.
Very clear. What his players, you listen to the whole thing. I mean, he was throwing his players under the bus after a huge loss to Notre Dame. I felt like I was taking pills with people acting like this was like a like he was completely taken out of context and the message changed. He absolutely was not. And I would love to come down on the reporter because it's a picket line crossing situation at a striking newspaper in my hometown. But unfortunately, in this case, it is what it is. Virginia Tech 38, Syracuse 10. Virginia Tech, Richard, might be. I don't know if we're saying proof of concept, but indicators of concept.
Corner turning.
The defense there has really, which you I think you'd expect with Brent Pry, has really congealed in the last few weeks. But also the offense, since Kyren Drones replaced Grant Wells, who had big, big, big turnover problems, it's been a lot better. And Kyren Drones is also a more dimensional, a two-dimensional quarterback, is a counter in the run game, matters in a way that Wells doesn't quite. Like, they've gotten it moving. Good to see. Should make a bowl game.
Penn State 33, Indiana 24 in the Big Ten. Penn State could have lost this game. I mean, Drew Aller threw a horrific interception late in the fourth quarter here when the game was still very much in doubt. I believe Penn State was only up 3, and then Indiana was able to tie the game. Then they come back and finally, hallelujah, man above, Drew Aller finally throws the deep ball and hits a deep ball and they score, and then they get a safety from Indiana on the ensuing possession and yada yada, the game is over. But all right, Penn State, that's what we're talking about, kinda.
Yeah, their wide receivers are not very good though. Like, Keandre Lambert-Smith made the play at the end of the game, also had a brutal drop on what might have been his next deepest throw in the game when he was fairly open over the middle. Like, it's an issue. I mean, if you talked, and I think their fan base is pretty on edge about it, understandably, there was a play made here for Drew Aller. They need some more plays to be made for Drew Aller, like a lot more, particularly in the one game that they play the rest of the season that will determine how their season is viewed. Like, something has to change between now and then.
Ohio State 24, Wisconsin 10. Braylon Allen got hurt in this game for Wisconsin, but holy hell, did Ohio State need Travion Henderson back. He comes back in this game, 150 plus rushing yards, ices the game at the end. Also, Marvin Harrison. Not going to take him. You're not going to take him one because quarterbacks exist, but holy cow.
Wisconsin was salty for a minute here, but I don't think ever. This was never in doubt the way that most Ohio State Wisconsin games are not.
Kyle McCord got injured, by the way, also in this game. Like, very clearly injured.
Yeah. Storyline to monitor going forward for Ohio State. This league only had one game inside a touchdown point spread coming into the week, and it wasn't that close in the end. Nebraska 31, Purdue 14. Nebraska on a similar arc to Virginia Tech right now, I think, was easy to forget about early in the year. And Nebraska is... They are sitting on 5 wins, and they are going to make a bowl game, I am pretty sure. They've won 5 of 6, and it's the same story. Like, their defense has been 1 year turnaround massively. Like, they have a good, solid, one of the better defenses in the country. And Heinrich Harburg hit a few chunk throws and did not spend the day giving the ball to the other team. So Nebraska wins the game. Things are trending upward there. Northwestern 33, Maryland 27. I don't want to talk about it. Keep it moving.
Georgia 43, Florida 20. I don't want to talk about it. Keep it moving.
Very fair. Tennessee 33, Kentucky 27. Oh, wait. You know what, Richard, on Georgia, Florida, you don't want to talk about it at all? I just want to give you another chance.
No, fucking talk about it. Whatever you want to say. They don't have talent. They're not talented enough. They
got Georgia fans and Florida fans listening to the show, whereas I know we have probably like 6 Maryland fans listening to the show because there are only like, I don't know, 10 of us left. Yeah, is this any more alarming than any other Georgia Florida for you?
No, they got beat by 30 points. Okay. I don't know, like,
only Georgia's 23. Yeah,
no, it was a paltry touchdown at the end.
Okay, fair.
Spiritually, it was a 30-point beatdown. Florida scored on the scripted drive to open the game, and then did not do anything the rest of the game on offense.
Tennessee 33, Kentucky 27. We have not, and we probably will not this year see a proper Kentuckying. This looked like it was in hand to possibly be one, but no.
Unless you're counting the Florida game. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I guess you got the 40. That's reasonable. A&M 30, South Carolina 17. A&M was in neutral here for a while, and South Carolina has immense problems that we've talked about. I think the most immense is that their offensive line, the thing is, it's everywhere. So I can't even, it's hard to pick one. But Spencer Rattler was getting, I think he got sacked four times and hit and pressured a lot. Reuben Owens, the five-star freshman, true freshman, had a touchdown here. Otherwise, kind of got bottled up, but I think they're starting to lean on him a little. You got a backup, Max Johnson, playing quarterback. Helps he got an eye, Smith and Evan Stewart.
Auburn 27, Mississippi State 13. It's one of those games where you remember our friends in the desert are very good at this. This total was 40.5 most of the week, then closed at 40 on the nose. This game was 27-13 with like 11 minutes left in it, and then nobody scored through the rest of it.
This was more points than I thought would be scored in the game, and you must give it to Auburn that they played offense well in this game against a good Mississippi State's offense is the futility thing that you know it is. But Mississippi State can defend, and Auburn got like probably the kind of Peyton Thorne game that he has really not had since the good year for him at Michigan State. Like the Kenneth Walker year at Michigan State. And hey, maybe something to do with that is that he had a running back in this game who was doing some work. Jarquez Hunter had kind of the game you envision for him. I think like 140 something yards on fewer than 20 carries. Encouraging for Auburn. They needed a day like this.
James Madison 30, Old Dominion 27. Did you see the very end of this game?
No, tell me about it.
Okay, so James Madison, by the way, they were scrapping here. It was a dogfight, to be fair.
I know they just hung on. I was monitoring the score. Yeah.
Yes, Old Dominion, very game in this game. But at the very, very end, and I'm not saying Old Dominion was going to hit a Hail Mary or pull off a pitchy-pitchy woo-woo, but there's like 15 seconds left in the game, and Old Dominion, which runs the Tennessee wide splits offense, one of their wide receivers, who was standing effectively on the sideline because that's the wide receiver split situation, ends up literally on James, like on the defensive side of the field, just chilling. And the inside slot receiver's looking at him like, what the hell are you doing? They snap the ball, but it's, I believe they call delay a game, but they call a penalty. Maybe it was offsides. 10-second runoff, 5 seconds left, and Old Dominion now definitely can't really do much of anything. James Madison holds on and wins again.
Maybe just trying to get away with it, trying to sneak over. I mean, the officials are pretty good at spotting that kind of thing. I don't know. Troy 31, Texas State 13. Troy is back, and like the word should be put out. Tough road environment, which I can't believe I'm saying, but things have changed rapidly. And San Marcos, like they put people in that stadium. They have a good atmosphere now. The defense for Troy, typical suffocating self. But I think what is notable is that Kimani Vidal, who does everything for them on offense, got bottled up. Ooh, 30 minutes. Guess what? We're going over this week on the Hurry Up. Can't believe
stoppage
it.
Time.
But they got like a serious Gunnar Watson passing game, which they almost never get. If Troy's offense can be adaptive in that way, like serious thing, defending Sun Belt champs and looking pretty poised right now to have a chance to do it again, to be back in that title game. Coastal 34, Marshall 6. Well, Coastal kind of stabilizing, although an interesting thing happening there at quarterback. Marshall might have lost the plot.
Well, defense is okay with them to good in some. I mean, they only have James Madison to 20 points last week, but yeah, not enough on offense. But yeah, after the game, Tim Beck sure made it sound like Grayson McCall's career in Teal is over. He got hurt last week and obviously didn't play in this game, but Tim Beck does not sound very optimistic he will play again for them.
Jarrett Guest, the backup, played well here. Louisiana 33, South Al 20. South Al gets 11 for 168 and two touchdowns from receiver Jamal Pritchett and still goes down at home because Louisiana has, and this is, I think, a very impressive kind of stability recovery job that Michael Desermo has done there. Like, remember when Billy rolled out to Gainesville, he took a lot, not just staff, but like, you know, an All-American offensive lineman, a lot of guys in the portal. And remember, we talked about this before the year. They avoided
the
bottom
wire out. He took the copper wire out the house.
He did. And last year they were still like a 500 team. They stabilized, and this year they are a threat. I think other than Troy, which is still, you know, the favorite, got the next best shot to be the Western team in the Sun Belt that goes and plays in the conference championship game. Desmond's done a good job. I mean, it's been steady there.
App 48, Southern Miss 38. This for a while looked like it was going to be mission critical for App State, and but they ended up coming back and winning the game. I actually kind of
the 10 is misleading, but yes.
I sort of quit on it when it looked like App was going to lose. I was surprised to see this that they won.
I watched the fourth quarter of this game, pretty uninterrupted. App got destroyed on the ground in this game by Southern Miss. Really, Southern Miss kind of just did what it wanted, toting the mail. And App also had I think they did turn it over twice. And at the very end of the game, while they were trying to ice the clock, they fumbled and they got lucky and they fell on it. They wound up kind of getting a breakthrough fluke touchdown right at the very end to make the margin look prettier. You and Godfrey have talked about Sean Clark's situation at some length. It's good that they didn't lose this game. I also would not presume that he is out of the woods yet.
Georgia Southern 44, Georgia State 27. Georgia Southern is good.
Creekwater, baby. Saying that for you, Steven. Dominating effort at home. Not quite, pretty dominating. Matt, this was a fun game. It was a cool-looking environment in Statesboro, as it should be. I think this is an example of, where a weeknight game is kind of cool because you are, as a G5 program, you understand that you're competing with a lot of different ways people can spend time, not necessarily in Statesboro, where Georgia Southern's a huge deal, but, seemed like there was a pretty nice visiting crowd up from Georgia State for this game. Stadium was loud, looked really energetic, and Georgia Southern looked a little disjointed offensively, but still scored a lot of points. There was a drive in the second quarter of this game where they had two or three bust plays out of three or four or five. They just did not look like they were on the same page at all. And yet the drive ended with them punching in for a touchdown. Kind of a fun, I don't know if I would say chaos team, but weird and pretty effective team right now at Georgia Southern. In the Mountain West, Boise 32, Wyoming 7. Air out of the balloon for Wyoming here. Yikes.
Yeah, Boise ain't dead yet. Physically dominated them, got the job done. Reminded everybody who they were. That's good for Boise State.
And did it despite Ashton Ginty, by the way, one of the best backs in the country, getting hurt in this game. Fortunately, they got another one, George Halani, but we'll have to monitor that situation.
Air Force 30, Colorado State 13 in the snow. Believe it's the first snow game this season.
Snowballs being thrown.
Colorado State, yes, had a 15-yard penalty called on them for the fans, the student section, I'm assuming, but the fans throwing snowballs at the sideline to the point where the event staff kind of had to back everybody up. And the first 20 rows were then empty for the rest of the game. Incredible stuff.
Look, I mean, that's a penalty, right? I mean, I think everything's fair here. Fair to throw snowballs because it's fun. And I think throwing snowballs at people is not demeaning in the same way.
It's the least dangerous projectile student section can throw.
It's a little cute to throw snowballs at the visiting team. It's a little cute. It's now in general you can't throw things at a stadium, but having a snowball thrown at you is cute. If someone throws a snowball at me, I'm not going to be wow, this is so demeaning. I'm not here to put on a show for you. I think, cute. I'm going to throw them back at you. But I don't think Air Force's coaching staff wanted to be in a snowball war because they were busy staying undefeated, which I understand. Fresno 31.
Fresno 31. UNLV 24.
Nevada 24, not UNLV. You're going to get in trouble for that one. But yeah.
Brutal.
Actually, I see why you did this. It's because I transposed a couple things in our notes. Actually, this is my fault that Richard just did this.
Thank you.
It was UNLV. Fresno UNLV.
Thank you.
31-24. My God, the Split Zone Duo notes. Whoever keeps these is doing a terrible job, but we're going to talk about
it
in a second.
Yeah, we don't know who it is, but...
UNLV had a heartbreaking conclusion to this game. They almost had the game-tying touchdown pass with, 10 seconds left. Jaden Malva gets an open man. He's wide open in the end zone, and the ball is dropped. And on the next play, an interception ends the contest. Would have been, kind of an amazing breakthrough moment for the Runnin' Rebs and did not come together. Fresno has... So for UNLV's part, they're already bowl eligible. It's still been a very good year for Barry Odom and Co., but from Fresno's perspective, now that Wyoming has lost again, Fresno might just fucking be in the conference championship again. Jeff Tedford just does this. Stuff just falls into place for this guy.
Memphis 45, North Texas 42. You okay? You going to be okay after this one?
Ugh, man, I'm going to be fine after this one.
Thought you had it, didn't you?
It's funny. I had basically given up on, like, you know, last year, my, like, oh, they should fire Ryan Silver for thing. Because we talked about it on the midweek at a lot of length. They have stabilized. They've gotten things together. But with a couple minutes left in this game, I texted you and Steven, and I was like, fellas, we might have a situation here. Stay tuned.
Win's a win.
Like,
win's a win.
It might have been a case of not being wrong, just being early, because they were up 31-7 in this game. They lost all of it, and then a few points. With like a minute left, North Texas is losing. Chandler Rogers, really fun quarterback for them, by the way. Like, one of, could start for a lot of Power 5 teams. Fun player to watch. Hits Damon Warden a deep ball. Like, insane catch, pinned to his thigh up against the sideline. North Texas goes ahead in this game after trailing 31-7. And then with like 47 seconds left in the game. Yeah, 47 seconds left. Memphis gets the ball back. They needed not 47 seconds. They needed 35 seconds to go 75 yards in five plays. Hennigan to Joseph Skates from 36 yards, where the safety for UNT just appeared to be dizzy. It's a hard position. It's a hard position, but he was just like lost. It's a really hard position. Safety. It will not be on his career highlight tape for the DB, the game winning touchdown.
And then at the end, we almost got us a Cal Stanfording at the end, I will say. North Texas really switched fields there, almost had a Cal Stanfording, but one of them went forward and he was tackled anyway, but one of them definitely went forward. Probably two of them, by the way, definitely went forward. But that's
yes, there was a moment there where, because like, I'm sure that in the stadium, nobody really freaked out because you can see where there's people. But like the close in broadcast angle, there was a point when they were running with the ball when I was like, wait,
where, like, is everybody?
Like, where,
right.
Where is everybody?
That is, yeah. That's the one cool thing about a broadcast angle on a pitchy pitchy woo woo, because like a vent, like he just is running and you're like, where is everybody? And you don't realize.
Yes.
It.
Like, you don't know. Like, I thought that he was just going to stroll into the end zone, but so Memphis beats the Chargers yet again here. And, you know, but I'll tell you, it had a chance to get ugly. Also, at the end of the Mountain West, I meant to mention that Nevada beat New Mexico 34-24. It's two wins in a row for Nevada. So that is why Nevada was in the notes next to UNLV and why I made that transposing error. SMU 69, Tulsa 10. Tulsa sucks.
It wasn't that close, by the way.
It was not.
It wasn't even that close.
It was not that close. Go through some numbers for the people, please.
SMU pulls its starters before halftime because this game was 52-3 at the half. Really and truly, SMU, if they wanted to, could have scored 100 if they really wanted to.
At halftime, it was 440 to 110 yards. By the game's end, for SMU, three different passers completing passes, seven ball carriers, 13 wide receivers with catches, none with more than 95 yards. And Tulsa is bad. And that coaching search last year, remember the names that were in that search, like GJ Kinney, Barry Odom? They got Kevin Wilson, and I'm not inspired. UMass 21, future American team, Army 14. Just saying, Richard, Air Force is making it look like Army may have miscalculated in its move away from, well, Navy is not making it look that way, but it's not really going well. Army's new offense. It's not.
Navy is not making it look that way.
It's not really going well. This is a great win for UMass though, and they don't get a lot of those. So full credit, Kayron Lynch Adams, 234 yards on the ground, three touchdowns. Army's 2-6. UMass is like 2-7.
This is going to be one of those years where we're going to have to pretend about Army Navy going into the game. Tulane wins. Tulane wins 30-28 over Rice. At the end of the game, Michael Pratt did a waste time move where he like throws it basically to the heavens, but it didn't kill all the time on the clock. And I know why they didn't kick a field goal, but you probably should have kicked it. I don't fucking know. They won the game. Who cares?
In the MAC, all but four teams were on byes this week. Western played Eastern Michigan in kind of that directional Michigan Bowl. It was just a three-point spread that I didn't totally understand with Western Michigan being favored on the road at 2-6, but Vegas always seems to know. WMU destroyed them in this game. Jalen Buckley had a really big rushing day. Marshawn Nealand, four-year guy who'd never had more than four sacks in a season, had three sacks just in this game against a rival. So good for the Broncos, good for Lance Taylor. The big one of the week, though, in the MAC, Miami of Ohio against Ohio. No Brett Gabbert for Miami. He's hurt. He's out for the year. But Miami comes through here, wins this game 30-16, and is in total command now of that half of the MAC, and should get a look at probably playing Toledo in Detroit in December.
CUSA quickly. Liberty 42, Western Kentucky 29. I think we talked about in the midweek. A little bit closer than the experts thought there, and a little bit closer than the final score indicates, but it is what it is. Jax State 41, FIU 16, and UTEP 37, Sam Houston 34. Sam Houston's winless. I don't think they're winless bad. They've had some tough breaks.
Yeah, I don't think they're winless bad, but they are bad, and I hope for them that they can beat Kennesaw State next week, because Kennesaw State is a bad FCS team this year. If they go 1-11 and their only win is over FCS, does that count as an FBS win? It counts as a win as an FBS program, I guess.
But Kennesaw is coming up, so
true. They're going to be in this conference next year. You might have to do some massaging. Hopefully, they can win that and one more. But I don't know, Richard. The hurry up was only, 13, 14 minutes long this week. We're getting shorter as we go.
Yeah, again, we are looking for the person who assembles the run sheet. We're looking for that person. We don't know who it is.
It's going to tighten up soon. I mean, we're already in play your way on territory.
Yeah. We are in the proper business end of the season. Again, we're looking for the person responsible. We'll let you know if we find him.